You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation, and tonight's episode is Relics. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
I'm James from London. I don't think either of our guests have a script, so should we first go to Paul?
Yeah.
I'm Paul from Edinburgh.
And I'm Chris from Glasgow.
All right. We haven't had either of you on for a while now. So, Paul, I think you've been on the longest. It's been the longest since you've been on. So, how are you doing, sir?
Good. I was just sort of explaining before the show, we're currently moving house. Emma is currently coming up for 8 months pregnant. So, a bit of change there since it was last on. So, in the next month, we should have a new house and a new baby.
How nice. Yeah, you were saying that the new owners are expected to come by any time now, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. I think it any time after midnight technically belongs to them, I suppose.
Ah, okay. Well, maybe they'll leave you alone for a while so you can stay with us as long as you can.
Yeah.
So, Paul, do you know whether it's a boy or a girl yet? And I suppose actually my real question here is that are you going to be able to squeeze in Tiberius as a middle name?
Well, it's a boy.
Okay, so the answer should be yes.
The answer is possible. I think you could maybe try that one on Emma. I did try and get the first name as Kirk. I thought that was quite a Scottish name. And I know quite a few people called Kirk because Kirk just basically means church.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I tried that as a name, but I don't think Emma was keen. She wasn't keen on Neelix either, so another options.
All right. You know, Paul, while you were talking, I've been sitting here scouring, trying to figure out when the last time you were on the show. And from what it looks like, Season 2, Episode 4, The Outrageous Akana. Is that true?
I think I was on one after that. I think it was also a bad episode. I can't quite remember exactly which one it was. I was definitely on The Outrageous Akana.
Oh,
but
hang on, Paul. We had you on for Imaginary Friend.
Right, yeah. Another equally bad episode, so it's quite good to be on for a good one.
Okay. All right. Okay, Imaginary Friend. I'll find it later. So anyway, okay, so let's go on to Chris. Chris, how have you been, bud?
I'm not moving house. I'm not having any babies. So, my life's pretty boring by comparison.
No.
I have to ask one thing, though, Paul. Why are you not going with Makewees?
No. Adam is keen for me to go with Makewees, but I feel like I don't want to ruin his opportunity to take that name for his firstborn son. I feel like I would be stealing it off him. So what we could come to an agreement, he can have Makewees for his firstborn, and maybe I'll have it for the second one, or maybe a middle name.
I'm looking at Louis, just got this blank expression.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah, totally right over me.
Well, you haven't got to that episode yet.
We have not. Not yet.
What's the name of it? See, I didn't even get the word itself.
I thought it was attached. but it's season 7.
Oh, okay. Attached?
I mean, I'm probably misspeaking.
I don't remember much about Attached, really. Or Dark Paged, for that matter. For some
You'll
reason...
You definitely remember Mikui's. He's extraordinarily boring.
For some reason, some of season 6 and most of season 7 is blurry to me. Because, I don't know, like, I guess that's... I look at season 6 as... Part of 6 and part of 7 is the reason why they decided to cancel the series. Because some of them were just stupid. Bad. But anyway. Okay, guys. Well, hey, welcome back on. James, do you want to tell me what you've been up to lately?
I've not been up to anything.
Me either. So it's time to go on. So the synopsis for tonight's show... The Enterprise discovers a ship that crashed on a Dyson sphere more than 75 years ago with a single survivor suspended in transporter buffer, Captain Montgomery Scott. Amazing. This is the 4th episode of season 6 on the season 6 TNG episode list. I don't know what I'm supposed to say there. It was written by Ronald D. Moore and directed by Alexander Singer. Guest stars include Lanai Chapman as Serial Rager. Does she die, guys?
No.
No, okay. Eric Weiss as Kane. And special guest stars James Doohan as Scotty. Co-stars Stacey Foster as Bartell. Ernie Minerich as Waiter, and Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer. So what do we think about this episode? Paul, you haven't been on forever, so you go first. What are your initial thoughts of this?
So it's always great when you get a crossover episode. Someone from another series pops up in the series, makes the sort of universe feel sort of connected and intertwined, so right away it gets a thumbs up. Scotty is, I think, a great character. I think James Doohan is one of the better original series actors. I think he acts with a lot of emotion, especially in this episode. I quite like that it's about nostalgia. I think the older I've got, the more I appreciate this episode, mainly because I think the episode really is about getting older. It's about reflections on sort of Scotty's life. I quite like the theme of usefulness. I think that works really well. My mum, for about the last sort of 10 years, has worked in an old folks home. My gran was in that home particularly, so I sort of spent quite a lot of time there. And definitely I think that the themes of usefulness, and actually the scene in particular with the original Enterprise bridge reminded me a lot of a room that is in this old folks home that they call a reminiscence room. And it's basically a room that is kitted out and looks like a living room from the 1950s, and the idea being that people who live in this old folks home, if they've maybe got dementia or Alzheimer's, they go to this room and it's meant to be more relaxed, and it sort of makes them think more of their past and their childhood, and encourages them to sort of talk about memories and that sort of thing. So I sort of could relate to that with the original Enterprise bridge. And in general, I think it's just a good adventure story. The idea of the Dyson Sphere is really cool. And I think James will probably sort of chirp in. And I think this is actually legitimately a theory. It's not just something they made up for the show. So actual science gets another tick. So I there's not really anything I don't like about it, apart from Geordi's attitude. But then, you know, there has to be an antagonist, so I don't mind that too much.
Okay, yeah, there's two antagonists in this one. One, not that bad, but still a little disrespectful. Okay. James, do you want to jump on something before I go on to Kieran? McDuff.
I was just going to say, that, I mean, I generally do agree with Paul on this. I used to think that this episode was great, but then I used to also had this impression that a lot of the fan base didn't like it because it was a bit too kind of, you know, nothing really happened. They bring back Scotty and that's about it. But, you know, watching it and, you know, trying to consider the episode, I really do enjoy it. I enjoy it a lot. You know, a lot of what has been spoken by Paul already, I really echo. And I mean, there really isn't an antagonist in this episode, right? And I do love the fact that you can watch an action-oriented sci-fi show, and the antagonist here is what is it? Age? People haven't given their usefulness. It's, you know, you're nearly into Star Trek: The Motion Picture territory here, and I do love it. I love this episode wholeheartedly, and I think that they do a better job with Scotty. Ooh, am I going to say they did a better job with Scotty than they did with Spock? But it, at very least, they do a very at least they do a much better job with Scotty than they do with Kirk in a couple of years' time in terms of integrating him into the TNG universe.
How about Bones?
Well, I mean that was
brief, very brief,
very brief.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I forgot about Spock until you just said that. Oh, okay. All right, Chris. How about you, buddy?
Oh, I have to echo the sentiments. I mean, when I was 12, 13 when this came out, and I loved it. I thought the idea of the Dyson Sphere was wonderful, has a basis in science, at least. And there's quite a lot of science in this, obviously, because it's Scotty, and that's his realm. So there was that. But I'm also old enough to remember before TNG came on, I mean, it was only Star Trek. So I'm always a big fan of TOS. So anytime anyone from TOS turns up in anything, whether it be Spock in the latest movies or the Unification, which is one of the episodes I was on, or you had McCoy in the Encounter at Farpoint, and later on we get Kirk, but well, maybe that's where my theory falls down. Not a big fan of Generations. Of all the cameo or all the guest appearances, I think this is probably one of the best. It's like giving away what my star rating is going to be later on. Like James said, there isn't any action in this one. The antagonist is a dying star. But there's a lot of meaning behind everything that happens in this episode, and it examines quite a serious kind of thing even in society today, of that feeling useful. So yeah, it's an episode I'm really looking forward to getting into.
Yeah,
and it just occurred to me that I think the TNG guys were very fortunate to have the original characters to come and, you know, pepper through their shows, because, you know, when, you know, Scotty coming onto TNG is such a kind of it's a big episode, it's a monumental event. When LaForge turned up in Voyager, did anyone care at all? And if LaForge turns up in the new, you know, a Picard series, is it really going to be that special? I kind of think that the introduction of both Spock and also Scotty, and, you know, the original characters being 30 years removed or so coming back in, it really did feel special at the time. And I don't think I don't think we're going to feel the same way when, you know, Worf turns up in a, you know, with Picard in a couple of years.
I think also that what really occurred to me watching this is that this is the type of episode that will probably never be made again. I know Star Trek's going for a bit of a revival. There's multiple TV shows in the works that may or may not come to fruition. But, you know, this type of story and this type of character development, I just think wouldn't get made today. Like, I could not imagine a episode of Discovery go into this level of detail about the emotions of a character, because they would have to fit in some violence and some drama for that episode, whereas this is, you know, very much like a lot of TNG episodes where it's just sort of a day in the life of the ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, for me, You know, and I remember when we watched DeForest Kelly kind of hand over the baton to the next generation at the end of part one, A Counter at Farpoint, you know. But and you reminded me that Spock did come on, but still, Spock still... It doesn't have the same emotion as Scotty did for some reason. Maybe because Spock wasn't a fish out of water like Scotty was. So, but we relived that first day encounter at Farpoint.
So, by the way, Lou, I think the big issue, the big difference between the Scotty episode and the Spock episode is that in the Spock episode, in Unification, the Enterprise goes into Spock's life. You know, they go into his story, and that, you know, they're sitting there and they observe his story. Whereas for Scotty, it's very much that Scotty is brought into, you know, the running of TNG, and I think that's what makes it so much more it brings much more emotion to that story. You do kind of view that particular story through Scotty, whereas it's not like, you know, an action scene that you're observing with Spock and his crew on Romulus.
It reminded me a lot. Has anyone read the book 3001, sort of one of the sort of sequels to 2001?
Yeah, Flight Pool comes back.
Yeah, they just find them out by Pluto, floating about, and somehow revive them. But it was very much the sort of adventure story of imagine waking up. Well, in his case, you know, I think it was, well, it was 1,000 years in the future, wasn't it? So, but it was a similar theme. It's a man who was a very capable person in his own time, having to sort of deal with the fact that he just doesn't understand the modern world. But what I got from sort of that book and this episode was definitely a sense of adventure. I think that's a lot of what I miss about this style Star Trek is adventure rather than action, because they are sort of two completely different things. You know, with action, you're almost an observer. But with adventure, you sort of feel a lot more part of the story.
Yeah, you guys got it there. And for me, having Scotty on, I thought it was very terrific. It's very good. And no, I never saw 3001 or heard of it. Never even heard of it. Or read it or anything. So, but back to the episode. Having Scotty on was it was wonderful. It was fun. And it's kind of heartbreaking in a way. I love this episode in every way. Except for one. But more on that later. So unless anybody has anything, I'll start going into the little bits and pieces of the show. Okay, then. The Enterprise is following the trail of a distress signal from a ship that's been missing 75 years now. So, what's the point of the Code 1 Alpha 0 ship in distress? I mean, they're dead, aren't they? 75 years? So...
Well, we proved that they're not dead. Or at least one of them's not dead.
One of them's not dead, but...
I think it's also the fascination with shipwrecks. Like, I think that's just the... You know, if anyone, you know, it's always in the popular news, if they find a shipwreck anywhere off the coast, it's sort of major excitement, and everyone wants to, you know, everyone wants to see a video. What does the Titanic look like now? I'd imagine, you know, even in the spacefaring times, it's a similar thing of, let's go see the shipwreck.
Yeah, and everybody loves a mystery as well. It's a case of finding out what happened to the ship. So they go onto the ship and they'll be checking logs to see if anybody survived the crash or if there's any log details of why the crash happened in the first place. So it's just solving a mystery. Whether they won't be expecting to find anybody alive because it's 75 years old, unless it's a Vulcan.
But isn't it just... I mean, Lou, the last time they came across a shipwreck was on during Power Play, right? Which ended up with them taking on the spirits of the inhabitants of the planet. So, you know, whenever there's a shipwreck, or in particular, like a ghost shipwreck, the adventure follows. I think that's why Riker's so excited.
Except for even then, they didn't have a code 1 Alpha 0. It just, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they just toss that type of stuff in to do the, you know, get everybody an alert. Because, I mean, there could be somebody down there. It could have a whole generation of people down there just had been waiting for someone to come rescue them.
What I didn't understand is he said like the reason they didn't detect this before was because of the mass of gravity. I can't remember exactly what they say the error is, but surely that would surely like a big massive gravity well would be something they would be more likely to detect than not.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think the analogy here is that, you know, I was out walking in the park and blimey, there's a big bright light. So, but why didn't you see it before? It was too bright. I mean, it's not an excuse at all. I mean,
they
wrap it up as a distortion in the gravimetric field. But that's what you're trying to detect. Mm-hmm. That's the sources of the gravity.
Wouldn't it be that you finally saw that light because usually you're running through the park and you never saw it, but you know the dog needed to go poo poo and so you stopped and well, there's that light. Never noticed it before. How could they not know it was there?
I honestly think they could have just said that they haven't
never been to this part of space or something.
Well, I mean, cause, you know, space is big, right? And I think we're led to believe that this star is a kind of normal like star, so it's likely to be, you know, the same as Earth's star. And I would imagine, or at least, you know, this is just, you know, if it's just in my mind, but I would imagine that you wouldn't. If you're flying outside of the solar system, you wouldn't probably be that worried about the massive ass solar system, so you'd probably ignore it. So I didn't think they had to, you know, having it as such a big confusion as why they didn't see it. You know, I don't think it shouldn't have mattered.
Okay, I suppose it doesn't. However, as they drop out of warp, they come across what looks like a Dyson sphere. Do I get it that it's just a big ball around a star?
Yep.
Hold the hell on. Okay, so what star system are we a part of?
The Sol system.
Sol.
Yeah.
Sol. Okay.
Or Sector 001, however you want to refer to it as.
Okay. So you would agree that there's this star system we're in is mighty big. To the point where we don't even know where it really ends, do we?
Well, we kind of... Well, it depends what you mean by ends, right? Because
it's got to be one part here, one part there, and in between here we are.
Well, no, because
I think there is some argument, isn't there? That is it the gravitational influence of the sun? Sorry, I can't remember what they call it. Is it the heliopause that they say is the sort of extent of the solar wind before you sort of hit the solar wind from other stars and there's a sort of neutral bit in the middle. So, you know, some people say the Voyager probes have left the solar system because they've passed the influence of the solar wind, but they haven't passed the gravity influence. So it depends how you define the expanse of a star, I suppose.
And then also, I mean, it could just be that, I mean, I'm sure there are proper technical ways of defining this, but you know, technically you never leave the gravitational field of the sun. It just becomes so small that it's irrelevant to you. So you could state that, you know, if you get out far enough so that that's not a major influence on you, that's the boundary. You could even argue that, you know, the bodies that are kept within orbit of the sun in a regular manner constitutes the boundaries of the solar system. So it's, you know, it's about how you want to define it.
Okay.
But Lou, it's mighty big. I think that was the original question.
Mighty big.
Yeah.
So even if we were...
Did you say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Did you say something along the lines of the sphere came out to around the orbit of the Earth?
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they said it was 200 million kilometers in diameter.
No.
Which is about an AU and a bit.
No, what they said is a ball, I call it the ball, could encompass 250 million class M planets.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's just Earth's atmosphere or Earth's orbit. It sounds to me, even if we were to just, let's just limit it to our area of the woods and all of the planets that we can clearly see. What's the farthest planet that we can clearly see? Don't make it Pluto, because you know what happened to him.
I think with the naked eye, I think you could sometimes see Uranus, but I think you can see Neptune with the naked eye.
Okay.
Hang on, Neptune... I think that is correct. You could also argue that back in the day, you know, you were able to see Saturn very clearly. So Saturn's a kind of like a, that's a very clear planet that's out there. Whereas when you get into Uranus and Neptune, it's much more of a, you almost need to know where you're looking.
Okay. So is Dyson saying that we can somehow construct a ball around all of that? And whatever energy is inside, we get to keep forever?
Yes. He's saying he's going to construct a ball around it, but he's not saying around all of the, you know, all of the planets. He's saying basically about the area during which, well, the distance to which we orbit the sun. He's basically saying wrap that up in a ball.
Okay. And that could hold 250 million of our planet.
I haven't checked, but you'd be surprised how quickly things scale in three dimensions, because if you think about the distance we are from the sun, so if it's whatever that number is, if you think about how big the Earth is, we might only be like 1,000 times smaller. So let's say that Earth is 1,000 times smaller than the distance to the sun, for the sake of argument. When you're having then to put that into a three-dimensional object, you are effectively kind of, cubing those numbers or those ratios. So the point here is that the number of planets that fit within a sphere, it does go up very, very quickly. And I didn't do the maths, but I have no reason to dispute their number of however many planets they quoted.
That's big.
I mean, if you like, I'll do the maths.
Maybe someday.
The maths.
It's 4 pi r cubed, and then it's like, I think they said 200 million kilometers in diameter, so it's 100 million kilometers.
Okay, so what's
times that by pi times 4, or cubic times it by pi times 4. And then you have to know what the mass of the Earth is.
Wow.
Not the mass. You need to know the size of the Earth and then work out how much of that can be divided into the Dyson sphere.
200 million kilometers in diameter. About two-thirds of Earth's orbital diameter around the sun. So either way, it's a very, very big, big ball. Okay. And the Janolan crashed on it. So, an away team of Wrecker, LaForge, and Worf beamed down to find the ship's system still running with minimal life support. How is the ship's system still running? Why does that not run out of power?
Well, hang on. So it could be that there's just a lot of... it could be that there's just a lot of battery power that's just lasted this long. But it could also regenerate, right? So it could be picking up, background energy from wherever. I don't know.
See, I wonder if they could create a system where, let's say this device uses energy to create more energy, which it uses to create more energy, which it also uses to create more energy. Is that conceivable?
No.
No?
You can't create energy.
I mean, if it creates a lot more energy than it needs. And every time it needs some, it just takes a little of that it just created. Okay.
Well, no, so, I mean, that breaks one of the fundamental laws of thermodynamics, in the sense that you can't create, you can't create energy out of nowhere. Mm. The best you can do is you can transform energy from something else. One thing I'm always confused about with Star Trek is that what the source of their energy is, because if they ended up having a relatively small, small source that's based on nuclear fusion, I actually don't think it wouldn't take a lot to keep that running keep that running a ship. Certainly a ship that's been crashed that is only just sustaining life. It wouldn't take that much energy in order to keep that going, or it wouldn't take that much fuel. So, yeah, I think they could probably get away with it with efficient energy stores.
Well, I guess so, because even crazier than that, the transporter's still running, and it's got a pattern in it still. So, we could beam somebody aboard, and the pattern has less than 0.003 signal degradation. So let's complete the beaming process, and poof, we have Mr. Scott from the original series standing there, a little confused.
The old and we cut to commercial. The old school transporter sound and all.
Yes, old school transporter, old school uniform, arm up in a sling, which Geordi then goes, good enough. So he beams aboard and we cut to commercial. I don't remember what the preview from the last episode looked like, but do you think he was actually in the preview?
I can't remember.
You mean the thing that they run at the end of the episode telling you join us again next week?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because they were. I mean, I don't know for certain, but I think they were heavily trailing the fact that Scotty was in the episode. It was going to be Scotty-centric. Because otherwise, right, what the hell are you going to have as your preview? It's like, hey, we're going to turn up to this place and there's someone in a transporter. Turn up next week to find out who.
Yeah, it could be. I mean,
sell anyone with that.
You know, Commander, there's a pattern in the buffer. We'll bring it aboard. And, it fades out the teaser with Geordi and Geordi and Riker going, wait till next time. Okay. So, Scotty mentions that there's actually somebody else in the transporter buffer, but unfortunately his signal degraded.
Yeah, the Heisenberg compensator failed, which means we don't know where he went, but we know how fast he went away.
Maybe Scotty sent more energy to his buffer than to the other buffer. Who knows? I mean, but still, Franklin never made it. And Franklin deserves better. So, sorry, Franklin.
Now, am I the only one that is a little suspicious that... I'm going to go out there a little bit and I'm going to assume that Scotty was one of the older members of the crew here. And he's one of the two survivors after the thing crashes. I mean, he doesn't look like he's in a physical and good enough condition to withstand a plane crash.
He broke his arm, but no, he wasn't a member of the crew. He was just a passenger.
Sure, but there are all these like fit 20-year-olds that must have been killed by the plane by the crash, and Scotty himself manages to survive.
It's real experience. You'll have known exactly where to stay on the ship coming down into crash, so... Where's the safest place in the ship? I'll be there.
Or maybe just as it was starting to crash, he jumped up real high and then...
Also, here's a question. Do you think you could use the transporter to protect yourself from the crash? So physically, you could turn yourself into an energy stream. And as long as the transporter survives the crash, they can unscramble you afterwards.
That's brave. Yeah, because you're relying on the fact that the transporter will stay operational in that period of time.
Yeah,
and doesn't lose your paddle. Hiccups.
Yeah.
It's like in the olden days when you used to have a portable CD player. You used to listen to it. You would run upstairs, but you'd be very cautious not to make the disc skip.
Yeah, this is a complete stupid diversion that I do every episode. But let's say the Enterprise D was going to crash, but not be destroyed. Just, bomb, hit the Earth. Or hit a planet. And everybody goes onto the holodeck and gets some kind of, like, weightless simulation going. Would they still hit the floor when the ship hits the planet? Could they possibly survive in something in the holodeck as the ship was hitting the planet?
Okay, the thing is that you're bringing the holodeck here, but I think you're bringing in the holodeck erroneously, because what you're assuming here is that the weight and the impact that is felt by the crew that are not on the holodeck is somehow kind of like the true impact and the true weight. And that's not true, because they have inertial dampness and they have artificial gravity. Mm. So given that they have inertial dampness and artificial gravity, you should be able to survive a crash by those two systems kind of taking over and doing intelligent things. And to the extent that they can't outside the holodeck, I see no reason to suggest that they would be able to inside the holodeck. Mm. So that's my answer for that one.
Okay. All right. So Mr. Scott made it through, but unfortunately Franklin didn't. And he was probably a red shirt, no less. So, okay, let's get one thing out of the way. Let's just get this done and over with. We all know that Scotty should know that Kirk is dead. Scotty thought Kirk was dead because he looked out of the Enterprise B, is it? Enterprise B, as the thing was blown apart in the deflector dish and Kirk is somewhere floating out there. Who knows? Maybe in pieces. Scotty thought he was dead. How the hell could he possibly go in the future and say, "Oh, Kirk himself, I'll pull the gold out of the multiples to come get me"? I'm sorry there, Paul. I'm sorry there, Chris. That's my best Scottish accent. That was just really insensitive of me. But he still did it! Okay, we all know that can't be possible. So let's... Well, we got that out of the way.
I have two separate retcons for this one.
Oh, one is, man! One is very simple.
Scott is shaken up from having been in a transporter for 75 years and forgets that Kirk's dead. my personal favourite is, although Scotty watched him die, he then later on hears stories of the survivors from the Lacool, who tell him about, oh, they felt they were ripped away from somewhere special, they were in another place entirely. And Scotty spends the rest of his short time in the 23rd century believing that Kirk isn't actually dead.
Well, I think that the simplest explanation here really is that Scotty, in Generations, is actually a changeling. and also, it's really unfortunate because it wasn't said to me, and as soon as it's said to people, you can like realize how true it is, but Scotty and Chekhov aren't the two characters that are on the bridge with Kirk in Generations. Now, it happens to be that it's James Doohan and Walter Koenig playing these people, but those people are really Spock and McCoy. Yeah. And that's how it was written, and that's how everything is, you know, there's almost no change in the dialogue needed for you to see that this was Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Yeah.
That's somehow or another, you know, the episode that we got or the film that we got, it just had this weird thing where Jimmy Doohan and Walter Koenig were playing Spock and McCoy.
Got it. Okay. But for those of you who still want to discuss why it can't possibly be the way it is, I'll just say, you know, it is. So let's just drop it and go on with our science fiction television show that we're talking about right now. Okay. Pull the old gal out of mothballs. Scotty's introduction to Worf. Now, when Worf comes walking in, I just immediately started laughing. Every time I see, I just start laughing. And it is hilarious to watch Scotty's reaction to Worf. And Worf's like, "Yeah? What?" You know? I'm surprised he didn't say, "What?"
Actually, because for Worf, right, how many times have we seen him have this reaction? Because it happened in, you know, season one, right? I remember that at least, when those people came back from the 20th century. It happened with Time's Arrow just recently as well. I mean, you know, he lives in the 24th century. He's fed up with all of this prejudice being directed at him by, you know, how many more times are we going to be picking up backwards people and them to be querying about Worf's suitability as a lieutenant?
Yeah, we'll see it again in First Contact as well, because Lily Sloane has the same reaction. He just goes, "I am a Klingon."
Yes, we do. Actually, that one's good, though. I do enjoy that one.
Yeah. So, okay. But, you know, I do notice that... What do you guys think about Scotty's... What do you think Scotty is feeling at the moment he sees Worf? I mean, do you think there's any kind of loathing or hatred or what the hell is this?
Well, I mean, from his perspective, it's not long after the Undiscovered Country. Yeah. Where obviously, he's played a part in ensuring that the peace talks in Kittimer aren't thwarted. So he knows things are certainly changing in the between the Federation and the Klingon Empire, but he does still have the old prejudices, and that was kind of what Undiscovered Country was about. So I don't think he's going to have changed all that much from that. So the surprise of seeing a Klingon in a Starfleet uniform is likely to throw him, because he still hasn't really come to terms with the fact he's now 75 years further forward than he was previously. So it makes sense to me. It's just, there's an element of surprise, there's an element of the old prejudice still there, and there's no excuse for a surprise when it happens again at the end of the episode.
That's what I say.
It's a different reaction at the end of the episode, I think. That's more of a case of, I'm glad I'm getting it away from you.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I can't believe there's a Klingon in a Starfleet uniform kind of look that he has at the start of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of think the same thing. You know, the second time he runs across him when, you know, Scotty's saying goodbye, you know, everybody, goodbye, au revoir, whatever, on, you know, goodbye. And he's like, giving him a look as he walks by. Like, yeah, touch me, I dare you.
I mean, it's also possible that Scotty's just a really good judge of character and he knows that Worf's a dick.
Well, if he knew that, then he wouldn't have been so friendly to Geordi.
Yeah, he would have stayed out of engineering.
Way out of engineering. Okay, so, as soon as Scotty beams aboard, the questions begin. And I love this part where you change the resonator array. I mean, it just... See,
that's good. That's really good, because it's during the transport phase. And I really enjoy that.
Yeah, yes. I mean, all the way to the point where he almost touched an EPS power tap. Oh, thank you. You know, I love those parts. He's just got all these questions. And another thing is, he's going to have all these old war stories to talk about. Everything that Scotty says and does, even though I know about them, I'm still fascinated by him. And Geordi is such a prick. Okay, Geordi's at the beginning. Geordi's like, "Ah, well, yeah, we replace those with these things. Here, let me show you. Boom. Oh, don't touch. Don't touch. You're gonna get fried." Oh, also, you said you were going to the old folks' home when you came across this Dyson sphere? Tell me more. That's the only time Geordi's ever nice to him. Okay, yeah. From that point on, he is like, the reason we could do that is because we do this. That's not true anymore. We can go within 3%. Shut up! Leave me alone! And I hated it. That's my one thing I hated about this episode. And you said, somebody's got to be the antagonist. Is that what I heard? Or protagonist, antagonist? I don't know who's who.
No, but I don't think Geordi's that bad.
Oh,
I really don't.
He is.
And he's not that bad.
Yes.
And the thing is, it's a mild annoyance that he has. And I think there's a legitimate reason, right? He's not there to, he's not there to... You know, to basically look after or to babysit Scotty. Although it is ironic, by the way, that Data, who is basically your personification of an autistic character, has better intersocial skills than Geordi does in this particular case. But I understand where Geordi's coming from. But the thing is that it's all building up, right, to them having their scenes later on in the shuttle. In the ship,
where
they effectively save the day. And I do think that, you know, it allows Geordi to basically step back and say, look, you know, things were very busy, things have changed. You know, Geordi and Scotty are different characters, and it's not least shown by the story of you didn't tell him how long it would really take, that kind of interaction. they are different characters, and I do think, you know, Geordi gets he upsets Scotty a little, but I think he comes round in the end, and I don't mind this as a, you know, mildly antagonistic Geordie. In particular, I suppose, it's not just Geordie, it's also the other staff, right? So this week, you have more than one engineer on the Enterprise, and he does annoy a number of people, or at least he bumps into a number of people, and he's wandering around Geordie and around engineering, and people are trying to get him to leave and stuff. And I didn't find this particularly harsh, or Geordie to be particularly harsh.
I thought it was really harsh. I'm not ruining this one. I thought Geordi had absolutely no patience whatsoever, given he knows exactly how long out of time that Scotty is. So for him to have no patience whatsoever, he's a busy man. He's got a lot of responsibility. I understand that, but he really needs to work on his sort of bedside manner. Because if he'd had more patience, then I would maybe have a bit more sympathy for him. But he seemed to lose the plot with Scotty so very quickly. But I think it was needed for the plot, because what we see in this is we start off with Scotty coming on board the Enterprise D, and he's really excited to see all the new advances. That's the Scotty I remember from TOS. That would you would tell him he was grounded and he would go and read his technical manuals. He was always excited to learn new things, and you see that when Scotty comes on board at first. But Geordie wears him down to the point that midway through this episode he's turning around and saying, I'm not a cadet, I can't learn new things anymore, which to me goes like totally against the Scotty I would know. But once Geordie comes round, starts working with him on the Janolan again, by the end of the episode, suddenly Scotty's quite excited to go off and learn new things in his shuttlecraft. So we go on that journey with Scotty, and it needs Geordie to be that impatient antagonist. So I think it works really well, but I don't think we can get away from the fact that it does make Geordie look like a complete dick.
Paul, how about you?
So, who are you asking for?
Oh, is Paul completely gone, or do
Paul's
I need to try and get him?
20 minutes.
Oh!
I'm afraid. He lost signal, and he texted to say that he would try to reconnect or get back to us video subscriber format.
Okay, well, if we lost him, he will send a synopsis of what he thought of the episode. So, okay. Here's the thing. I'm going to give Geordie a bone. Okay, I'm going to toss him one bone. He's got work to do. Okay, he doesn't have time to have this guy walk around and start opening the dilithium chamber or start pressing buttons when he doesn't know what that button's going to do or what the opening the dilithium chamber could possibly do to the new technology. Perhaps. I get that. But there's a way he could say, Scott, Mr. Scott, Scotty, call me Scott. Okay, Scotty, I get it. You wanna know about this all. I want to show you all this. But this is all new technology that, let's face it, you're just not familiar with. So before you go touching things and, I don't know, breaking something or getting hurt, like the EPS power tap, let me show it to you first. But first, I got to do this. Would that have been better than... then just
so you know, I'm not just thinking of the kind of the alternative story here, where, you know, where Scotty does come on board the Enterprise and he is, you know, inquisitive and stuff, and he does touch one of the power relays and he then gets killed, and the entirety of the life of Scotty is that he survives the crash, he then gets resurrected 75 years later, but he then puts his head unfortunately into the, you know, dilithium chamber and it explodes. I mean, what kind of story do you want them to tell here, Lou?
Yeah, really, that's a thing. I mean, but it didn't come across that way. It was a you know, even okay, I know the first moment Geordie just all of a sudden has had enough of him is when he touched something, beep 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 beep, oh, you know, this is not right, and Geordie's like, it's designed to go that way, and that's where he turned, and it just got worse from that point on, you know. I mean, to the point where, you know, and quite frankly, you're in the way.
Yeah, there was no need for that.
No. I can't, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like Geordie just didn't have any patience for him. He didn't have any respect for him. and he certainly doesn't give a crap about him. Until Captain Picard made him realize when you get to a certain age and you're 75 years away, you should have been long dead now. Everybody you know is gone. Everything you've ever known means nothing. Why don't you take a break? Give the guy a chance. And that's when Geordi starts to turn around and they work together. James?
Yep, no, I agree. I think it's all down to intersocial skills, right? And Geordi has none. And right. What he should have done, he should have either, you know, in the same way that
Now James is gone.
Somebody's messing with the signal today.
Mm-hmm.
People keep crashing at Dyson Spheres.
Must be Geordi. He's getting angry at us.
He's had enough.
Uh-huh.
I'm quite amused at what James was saying earlier, though, about the alternative plot to this, where they go through this whole convoluted way to bring somebody 75 years into the future, only to kill them in a really stupid way. They're saving that for Jim Kirk.
Wait a second. Is that something they actually thought of?
Well, no, that's what James was suggesting, the idea of bringing Scotty into the future through the transporter, survives the crash.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, only for him to stick his head in the dilithium chamber and it explodes. So, yeah, I mean, to die in that such a silly way, having gone through that whole way of bringing him 75 years into the future. No, they do eventually kill off somebody in a very stupid way, but it's Jim Kirk that gets it that ending, not Scotty. So.
Hey, sorry, I disappeared for a while.
Oh, that's okay.
I disappeared mid-rant as well, so I don't know how that happened. Someone disconnected.
Geordi cut you off.
Yeah, Geordi cut you off. So basically, I would just start all over again from where I said James, because, you know, I mean, what do you think about what we've been saying?
Well, I'm now no idea where you're up to.
We're right at the same spot.
No, but I think realistically, Geordi here is just, he's not dealing with a guest correctly. So if he had an admiral on board, or if he had Leah Brahms on board, have to deal with these people, you know, in a respectful manner. And if they're a little bit behind the curve, or even a little bit ahead of the curve than you, you have to just be diplomatic, and you shouldn't be too uptight. And I think at this precise moment in this episode, Geordi comes across as someone who's very overworked, and he's really uptight, and even if that was true, then get an ensign to show Scotty around. He must be able to spare an ensign or spare Data for a couple of hours, right? Or spare Troy for a couple of hours.
Data could certainly have been spared, given he was hanging around 10 forward the entire time.
Yeah. What was that about? I mean, all this stuff to do in Data, he does not require sleep, you lunkhead. I mean, or he doesn't require something, you lunkhead. I don't remember what he said, but... anyway. Even the young ensign who shows him to his quarters cuts him off.
Actually, so that's not great, right? Because we've seen enough Star Trek to realize that there are basically four people on the Enterprise that do any work. The rest of them are hangers-on. So by the time you get away from, you know, Picard, Geordi, Data, and possibly Crusher when they're ill people, no one else does anything. So how, you know, he can't even answer like three or four questions or sit through a couple of stories with Scotty. I mean, yeah, he was not upholding the Starfleet standards as far as I can tell.
He seemed like he was really young and really inexperienced, and was more worried about not doing his own job, whatever that job may be, if it's cleaning the decks or showing people about. He didn't want to get stuck listening to stories for hours. If it was me, I'd be sitting there listening to stories for hours. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, the short spell that we got a call back to the Dolman of Elas from Ilana Troyes. We had Wolf in the Fold, where there was Argelius, and he got into a wee bit of trouble. Accused of murder.
Murder. Yeah,
and all of these things are great, right? It's really good that they've got so much of this you know, nods to the past. They nod the Naked Time as well, and you know, it's all good stuff. I'm always surprised as well that, I mean, so the ensign that kind of cuts him off. He is behaving as if he's late to meet his girlfriend, and he has to really sneak out now, otherwise he's in trouble. And they keep pushing Scotty towards the holodeck as well. I think they mentioned it like on a couple of occasions that, hey, go and, you know, what are you going to do on the Enterprise? Go to the holodeck. And they mentioned it twice, and you think, why? You know, holodeck, gymnasium, and what was it? Something else that they were offering him. No one was prepared to engage with him on a human level, and they really were just pushing him away to get him out of the way. Which, considering there are 1,000 people on the ship, someone must have been able to spend a bit of time with the guy.
You would have thought at least one person out of 1,000 would have thought, "Oh, I want to go speak to the old engineer for the original Enterprise," and just sat and listen to stories for hours.
I mean, at this point, we make fun in Space Seed where there's a ship historian. But isn't there a ship historian that could sit down with the dude and chat?
Yeah.
Where's the equivalent of MacGyver? Yeah.
All right, so anyway, yeah, we don't know what this guy's job really was, so. But maybe they told him, get him to his quarters and get your ass back quickly. But still. Obviously, they had to do that because they probably had to set him up for all these heartbreaking failures. You know, get him on board, push him away. You know, even Crusher during the physical. She's like, you need to stay off your feet. You need to just relax. I'll have somebody come take you to your quarters. And they all walk away. And he's like, oh. And then he gets to his quarters, and this little punk brings him in. It's a, you know, first it was, I keep trying to find you something bigger. Bigger! I mean, even an admiral in my day wouldn't have such quarters. It's huge. Well, okay. So that's not what he wants. What's the problem? And then he starts going into his story, and the guy's like, oh, I gotta go back to work. Bye-bye. Then we get Scotty. He's all alone. He can't tell the speed of the ship by the deck plates. He has nothing to do except for sit down in this empty room. And that's just heartbreaking.
Yeah. Exactly. He eventually just seems resigned to the fact he's got nothing to do at this point in time, and he sits in the chair. So it doesn't even think, I'll just go to bed and get asleep. It's that would have been a bit more practical. There's an obvious resignation of, I'm just going to sit in this chair and wait. Yeah. And it's sad.
Yeah, it is. Until he realizes there's an engineering station on this ship, and he probably gets up all excited. He cleans his clothes off. Whatever those things in his pocket, looks like one of them was a tire pressure gauge. Oh, but anyway, he cleans his uniform, and he goes down to engineering, where he thinks he wants to not only see what it is, there's an investigation underway, he wants to help. And he has this chief engineer, who should be not only kissing his boots, and learning everything that he could possibly learn from this old man. He's just too busy for him. He ain't got any time for him. He doesn't want anything to do with him. And he wishes he would just get the hell out and leave. Fine, Missile of Force. I'll leave you till you walk. It was just wrong. And I can understand Jordy was busy. It just comes across as wrong. I'm not here for a tour, laddie. I'm here to help. Yeah, what can he really do? Fine. Give him a pad, sit him in the corner, and see if he can figure something out for you. I don't know. Is that too hard?
Well, by the way, is this really on Geordi, though? I mean, isn't this the captain's responsibility to make sure that everyone or the guest is taken care of?
Yeah, yeah. And Scotty is captain. I'm not sure why Scotty would be captain, because he was captain of engineering. Well, how many captains do you have on board? That's a glitch in the Star Trek movies. That created more than one captain on a ship. And that's fine, because Scotty never took command of his own real ship. But no, Scotty's not going to want to hang out with the captain. Maybe, someday. Let's compare Captain Picard and Captain Kirk, and we'll see, you know, oh, Captain Kirk would never do that. Captain Kirk would have ripped his shirt off and took control, you know, but he's an engineer. No, and but Geordi is who needs to help him.
I mean, when Geordi gets... So when Geordi and... when everyone gets back and, you know, Scotty comes onto the Enterprise, does he meet Picard in the transporter room to begin with? Or is it only later?
Doesn't meet Picard until the holodeck?
No. Yeah. No. He meets him in sickbay, doesn't he? Sickbay. Because I'd love to hear more about this, Mr. Scott. But then he turns to Geordi, I need you to get on a blah, 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 blah. Well, okay, Mr. Scott. You take care of... I'll try and get with you later.
So the fact that we've got, like, you know, a guy wandering around, very clueless, that should have probably a bit of respect around him, you know, similar to what an ambassador would. At the end of the day, it is the captain's responsibility to make sure that at least, you know, Troy is aware and Troy can go down and take care of him in his quarters or whatever Troy gets up to. I don't know what she does. She wasn't even in this episode, right?
I was going to say, I don't remember seeing her at all.
Troy is in the episode right at the end. When he's leaving on the shuttle. But there was another scene that was deleted for this episode that they filmed where Troy goes to meet Scotty in his quarters. It's one of these things that you can read about on the Alpha.
It
was deleted for time. It didn't add anything, but it was filmed, and there's a picture on Memory Alpha of Troy shaking his hand.
Oh my God, if anybody on that ship needed counseling at that moment, it's him.
Yeah.
Where was she? Oh, is she stuffing down more chocolate? No. Okay. Anyway, like I said, this man can't get any respect anywhere he goes.
So he heads up to a bar.
He heads to the bar. Well, yeah. I mean, nobody wants anything to do with him. What the hell? He might as well just go get drunk. And it's unfortunate.
Before he gets there, I do have my one criticism, and it's a very tiny annoyance more than anything else about this episode. It's just before he stops talking to Geordi and engineering. He turns to him and says, "Laddie, I was doing this while your grandfather was in diapers."
No! Great grandfather, yeah.
Nobody in Scotland says diapers. It's nappies here. So it's really awkward in the way he says it. It almost has like three syllables. Diapers.
It is a three syllable diapers.
So not only is it not the word that I would expect Scotty to use, but it's also said in such an awkward way that it highlights the fact.
Actually, can I be? Let me be slightly critical here. I think James Doohan's performance is generally good, but I don't think they had many retakes, because I think that there are a couple of instances, and maybe it's what they wanted to go for. I don't know, who am I to second guess the guy? But there are a couple of instances where there's just, you know, a little bit too much of a pause mid-sentence. And also the diapers as well is something that's always flagged in my mind that I always thought, oh, so you only got him for a morning then, or, you know, something like that. I do think that they must have rushed him a little.
No, I think it was an anger. When you're angry and you're talking, you're thrusting your words. And I could see where he said, you know, Scotty, how much engineering do you know? Oh, lad, I've been driving starships for 50, your great-grandfather was in diapers at the time. Okay, but he's angry, and he's getting angry, and he's, I was doing just before your great-grandfather was in diapers. I could see that being possible. Second thing, though, nappies? I mean, no, this is an American TV show, and I'm sure everybody would... He's a Scot, but he works in the future where there's no such thing as wordplay as to what's over here and what's over there, because we're all one now, so we probably settled.
Yeah, but there's no way that diapers is the one you're setting it on. That's not happening.
Who knows? But in the end, it's an American TV show. And if he was to say, before your great-grandfather was in nappies, What's a nappy?
Authentic.
Yeah. Do you not know what a nappy is?
I do know. I've talked to you enough times that I know. But still, the point is on an American TV show, you're going to confuse way more people who are going to actually catch the Scotsman using an authentic word. I don't know.
Well, the other thing you could have had in this was Scotty saying, telling Jordy not to spit his dummy out. But that might have confused you as well, because they went, what's a dummy? A pacifier. Oh, okay. Can we do that again? Don't spit your pacifier out. Do you have that phrase there?
So me calling Jordy a dummy, he's a pacifier, that means he's a pacifier? Boy, do we have some word differences here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway. But like I said, so he just gets shit on all over the place. I'm sorry. I probably shouldn't say that, but he does. And so he wants to go get trashed.
Before we move on again, there's another thought I had. When he took out the crystals and he was worried about them decomposing or whatever it was, and Jordy turns in and says, oh, we recomposite them in place now.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing that they did in The Voyage Home? But they had to go and get the photons from the nuclear vessel. And they couldn't do it in the 23rd century, but it was a 20th century solution to it. Did Scotty then go back and write that up, and then somehow that's made it to the 24th century, so they now can recomposite crystals?
Yeah, I think so.
So I wonder if this was a very, very subtle reference to that.
It may have been, you know, because they don't have any nuclear vessels. And I hate that. They know running water in these pipes behind me goes like crazy, but they do it anyway. Sorry, guys. Anyway, so here's another thing. What if the ship was at warp at the time he opened that thing up?
Good question. I don't know.
You would imagine he wouldn't be able to. Either that or head explodes. I don't know.
Ship explodes. I mean, or would it just be like hitting the brakes on the car?
It's just when James said that, maybe you probably can't when it's at warp. It just occurred to me, it's probably like the washing machine. You can't open the door when the washing machine's on. You have to wait till the cycle finishes, then you can open the door. It's probably the same idea with us.
Yeah, also, you can't turn a car off while you're going at speed as well.
You can.
Most modern cars, I mean, I know you can probably from a while back, but most modern cars, you can't turn off the car whilst it's going at speed. You can't get it into reverse either.
Oh, you can't. Well, you can get it in reverse, yeah. But you'll blow out your transmission. And as far as turning it off, you can turn it off. It would just glide to a stop.
No, you can't. You can't. I mean, so I'm mainly talking about the ones that have now the push button in order to kind of get started. But
yeah,
on my one, when you press the button, it doesn't turn it off. It won't turn off if you're going at speed.
Oh yeah, not an electric start, but I mean,
no, nothing. Again, yeah.
Traditional. I got a 2013 Kia, and you can absolutely turn it off, and then
open the doors at speed. And jump out.
Exactly. Now that would not be a good idea. My guess is warp drive would just shut down and flow along, you know, until it hits a planet or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So okay, he heads to 10 forward where he wants to get some scotch. Neat. Does that mean no ice? Because apparently it looks like there's no ice.
Yeah.
And of course, the bartender stands there and wants to get his wants to get Scotty's praise for such a good, you know, good drink poured neatly. What blazes is this? Didn't you order scotch, sir? Letty. You guys, and your Letty. Oh, Letty. Now, in here, the math doesn't feel right. He was driving Starship before Geordi's great-grandfather was in nappies. And now, for all you Americans who are now going, oh, Lou, don't do that. Anyway, now he's at the bar, and laddie, I've been drinking scotch 100 years before you were born.
That I can believe. I mean, he's already 75 years out of whack, so this bartender looks like he might be in his 20s. If he's lucky, he's in his 30s.
What, maybe. So I'm just saying the math is wrong because he's 75. He's been gone for 75. That would make him 150. You know, the math just isn't there. The bartender might be 20. Now, I've been drinking scotch 122 and a half years before you were born. Maybe the math came out wrong. He could just be throwing out 100 years just because, well, you know, he can.
Yeah, 100 years would be about right. But like, if this is, what, 2370? Yeah, roughly. Good. So you're talking 2270, which is about the time of Motion Picture. So he could have been drinking scotch around that time.
Yeah, but my interesting fact about Scotty is that he was born in the year 2222. So cool. I would imagine that he was drinking scotch from 2228. 2229, something like that.
Yes, absolutely.
When he was five?
Yeah, so clearly, you're right. Well, so, Lou, you're not objecting that he was too young to drink, are you?
No, just the math seems a little wrong. Like, it would be a lot more than 100 years before
he was born. When you say, I've been drinking for 100 years longer than you, I mean, you're not necessarily saying 100 only in 100. It's anywhere from 100 to 150 or
150 or something like that. I mean, didn't we establish, James, that you know, you could take kids into pubs a lot younger than ours and they could drink a lot younger than we can? So who knows?
I honestly get really confused by your laws over there where you can drive before you can drink, and it appears you can buy shotguns before you can drink as well. What the hell is that about?
Oh yeah, you can drive before you drink. You can decide who gets voted into office before you can drink.
Why?
I don't know.
What's the issue? What? I mean, it's very common. I mean, so you know, whatever the legal situation is, but in Europe, it's very very common for 16 would be on the upper end of when kids could legally drink, unsupervised by themselves, and that's unsupervised by themselves. So. Anything about, you know, having drink with family is much younger.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, well, you know, my daughter was trying to convince me today that you can actually, a minor can actually drink at home with the family on a dinner or something earlier than 21. But I'm like, that doesn't sound right. But you have to wonder if it's because they're not mature enough to drink yet. Do you see a high number of... drunk drivers, or whatever you guys, I know you guys have a different term for them, but somebody who drinks and then gets behind the wheel, do you see a higher proportion of them the younger they are?
I wouldn't have thought so. Well, one thing you have to understand is that the UK in general is quite kind of like city focused. So you've got at least half the population that are going to be living pretty close to cities. And I would imagine, I mean, I've really not heard of drunk driving as an issue for decades, 3 decades or so. And I would imagine I just don't have any visibility at all on drunk driving.
Wow.
That happens. It's not a zero number, but it's not a significant number either.
Wow. Yeah, because here it is a significant number. And, you know, these are adults who are doing this. And can you imagine? I can just imagine if they were to bring teenagers into the fray of drinking, going to the pub, drinking, and then getting behind the wheel when their brains are already not as developed as an adult's to begin with. Then I could see being a whole lot, especially when you consider kids. Here, kids are speeders because nothing's going to hurt them. Nothing hurts me because I'm young and I'm quick and I know what I'm doing. But they don't realize that not only could they get hurt, they're going to hurt a whole bunch of other people with their actions. So if I had my choice, 16 to get a driver's license here, no, I would turn that to 18 if I could. But, oh well. I've been driving since I was 16. And the funny thing is, I have not been in an at-fault accident since I was about 20. And I'm almost 50.
So I thought you were going to say at all.
No. I had one or two, but...
I've never been in an at-fault accident. I've actually never been in an accident full stop.
I was a pizza delivery guy, so yeah, I've been hit from every direction except above and below. But anyway.
I've been in accidents, but none of them are my fault.
Yeah, no, just the one. Just the one, because I saw a red light next block over, and I thought it was red, or green. I thought that I was looking down the street, and boom, got him. But whatever. Now, with my insurance, if I had an at-fault accident, they wouldn't even raise my rates. Because it's been 30 years. So, anyway. So, the android behind the bar sure brings Scotty's spirits up. Because he gives him one of Guinan's private stock. Which, by the way, is... It is green.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was so cool.
this is my favorite joke in the entire episode. Because it's just a callback to the Kelvins. When Scotty was getting one of them drunk. And does exactly the same joke.
By any other name.
Yeah, and the thing I like the most is that Scotty doesn't acknowledge the reference, right?
No.
He just does a hey. And,
he just goes, yep, this'll do it. I mean, when you've been exposed to synthahol, which is pretty much the quorn of drinking, so what's the point? It doesn't get you drunk, it's just alcohol. So you may as well be drinking anything, really. It's a decaf coffee. What's the point?
Yeah, really. God, that will... Oh, no. And that was a while ago since he... And he was partially drunk at the time he said it is green or whatever he said. It was different, but...
Now, am I alone in attempting to use that line in everyday conversation? Because I think I've used it at least 3 or 4 times with my wife in particular.
I have definitely used that joke.
Oh, really? I can't say that I have. You know, here... I'm holding up my lifesavers, right? And they say, "What is that?" And I go, "It is white." No, I don't think I've ever had the occasion to do that. But now, since you guys, I have. I probably will, just for that point. You know, I'll be saying, "Oh, I've been waiting for this moment. It is white."
I don't know. It was actual green because I gave somebody a glass of limeade.
Ah,
and then, what's that? Well, picked up, looked at it, sniffed it. It's green.
It's green.
It was just perfect.
Couldn't resist it. And what's funny is two people in that conversation, and maybe only one, realized what it was about. That's the beauty of it. No one will know anything of what you're saying.
That happens to me all too often, that I make Star Trek references and people don't even realize it.
No, absolutely. So, Lou, I've mentioned this before on the show, but I will mention it again. I have been delivering my wife tea Earl Grey hot for the last 15 years. And she does now know where it comes from. And but she didn't. She, for a good, like, over well over a decade, she just thought I had a really weird way of saying tea Earl Grey hot.
Would you like a little tea Earl Grey hot?
Yeah, and so she drinks Earl Grey, and she doesn't have anything in it, so it's a tea. Goes, yep, Earl Grey hot. Yeah, sure.
James, would you bring me some hot Earl Grey? I'm sorry, what? Would you bring me some hot Earl Grey? I don't understand. Earl Grey, hot. Oh, gotcha. Okay. All right, so Data takes him to the holodeck. No, Data doesn't take him to the holodeck. Data tells him where to find the holodeck because, you know, they had a long discussion about it.
And he finally gets there.
He staggers there.
he was hammered by the time he got to the holodeck.
The android at the bar says, "You can show me my ship. Show it to me." Like it goes, okay, come on in. First of all, who are you and what are you talking about? Enterprise, show me the bridge of the Enterprise, you chattering piece of shit. Oh, well, he never got that part out. And, of course, well, could you give me more? I mean, there were five of them, after all. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. You're our resident Scotsman here today. You do that line.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just going to pick him up on the fact that technically there was another Enterprise, but they didn't know that at the time of filming this, because the NX-01...
But they do specifically mention... They mentioned Federation starships.
Did they?
Yeah.
It's actually say Federation?
Yeah, they do. They say Federation starships.
But is the Enterprise still in commission when the Federation's founded in 2161? I don't think they decommissioned that, had they?
I have no idea.
I mean, obviously, Trip was dead by that point. But I think the Enterprise NX-01 was still running within the first few days of the Federation, so I would say technically it was a Federation starship by that point. There have been five Federation ships with that. Yeah, the obvious point is it wasn't. Nobody had even conceived of it at this point, so.
You're right. I just listened to it. She specifically says there have been five Federation ships to bear that name. So at that time, there was no Federation.
Okay, and when was Federation formed?
2161.
Because apparently, according to Wikipedia, the NX-01 was decommissioned in 2161.
I don't know
if it's on the day.
That was his final voyage, was taken after to the ceremony that founded the Federation.
Yeah, at which point it blew up on the way back.
Yeah. So he gets to the holodeck, and he finally is able to relate to the computer what he wants, and he walks in. And there we go. Just seeing the look on his face as he's like, holy crap. You know, and he walks in, and it's just... Watching him walk on the bridge of the Enterprise over to his workstation.
Yes. That was such a key point. It was the zoom. So we looked at him, and then we looked at the bridge, and then we zoomed in, not on the captain's chair, but in the engineering section. That little subtle point is brilliant in this episode.
Absolutely. And, you know, he talks to the Enterprise, you know, here's to you, lass. And he pours that drink, and then he just turns around and bows his head. Painful. It's just painful to watch that.
It's painful, and it's spine tingling as well, because this is the Enterprise. This is his Enterprise. He hasn't been on this bridge in, 20 years since it was blown up. It's another 20 years before that since it looked like that. Yeah. So from his perspective, it's been 35, 40 years since he's been on that bridge. And there it is in all its glory again. It's spine tingling. And very sad at the same time, because it's empty.
Oh, yeah.
And that feels wrong.
As soon as the holodeck door closes, all the Enterprise D sounds are gone, and all you hear is the ping of the sensors.
Yeah.
And it just was... You're right. Spine tingling is exactly what it felt, because I could feel goosebumps as he was walking across that bridge and sat down in his chair, and he lost it. He almost lost it. If Picard hadn't come in, he probably would have been through that bottle crying the entire time.
Yeah, and the only thing I was a little bit surprised by was the computer wasn't just a little bit more picky, because it obviously shows him it before the refit, not after the refit. It never asked him, he never specified it. All I said was NCC 1701, no bloody A, B, C, or D. But I never asked him if it was pre or post refit, so that would have really annoyed him.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. And I don't know if he used the word original or not, but still. So, James, anything?
No, this is great. And it's a good... They had to rebuild a fair amount of this, didn't they?
Yeah.
For this episode. Because he obviously sits on the chair and stuff. And, you know, you'd imagine that they would just have all of this in storage. And I always imagine that that's the case. But, you know, I don't think that was the case.
After it was all decommissioned in the end of the 60s, it was just gone. There was none of it left. They rebuilt a lot of that from just watching the episodes and stuff. and they had to do it for. I don't think they rebuilt like the entire circular aspect of it. They only rebuilt from certain angles.
And I think that they ended up. I think I saw an interview with one of the guys that worked on the show. Can't remember who it was, but they mentioned that the kind of display that Chekhov or Sulu had that kind of came up was rebuilt from scratch as well. So there's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of of work and love that went into it. It's not as if they're just throwing a CG background that they had stock.
At the time, did they even have CGI?
I mean, basic, right? It would have been very basic. I think that when you get to Trials and Tribulations, that they're able to obviously do a lot more in terms of CGI, and they had the issue with Jadzia Dax on the bridge, for example, and obviously Sisko as well. But mostly this is much closer to that, to rebuild and physical effects than what they were able to do with that episode in, was it 4 years from now?
Well, it seems that as I'm looking at him going into the holodeck and we see the bridge.
I think that's blue screen.
And I wondered that, because that is so much intricate detail. And then when we get to his point of view, it's a different feel.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so I read the novelization of this episode once. And Memory Alpha makes reference to this, actually. This was extended in the book, where for part of this, he actually interacts with sort of older versions of his shipmates, which is something he wanted to do in the episode itself, but didn't have the budget to do it. It's kind of similar to what they eventually did with Trials and Tribulations, when they obviously it was easier to do and they had more of a budget and so forth. But I think Picard comes in and interacts with them as well at one point during the novelization of it. So the novelization is not quite the same as the episode. It's more of a, this is what we'd have liked to have done on screen but couldn't. But I mean, I think what we get on screen works better because the empty bridge still gives you that feeling of Scotty's come home, but it's not really home.
Oh no, nobody's there. Nobody. Yeah, Kirk's nobody. Not there. Spock's not there. You know, I mean, even Uhura. Not there. And I did confirm, actually, as I compare, I'm looking at the background again with him walking in. When he finally gets to his workstation, it's a tiny little station. But in the original master of him walking in, it's a full all, because it was all one piece all the way around. And so, yeah, you could tell it's they only recreated just a tiny portion of it that he needed. And that's irrelevant. So Picard coming into the holodeck to talk to Scotty, I thought was pretty good too. But he finally has some time for him. And here's another thing. Finally, somebody in this future has got a little class.
Yes. Well, first of all, Picard knocks back Aldebaran and Whiskey like it's nothing.
Oh, yeah.
I ended him for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be careful. That's mighty... Aldebaran Whiskey. Who do you think gave it to Guinan? Yeah, exactly. And they start to swap stories about ships that define them as men. Or as who they are. They define them as who they are. You know, this ship defines me as a person. And then, it's a Stargazer. Well, we saw the Stargazer. Is that something that, Picard really would truly want to command again?
Mm-hmm. And he makes that point. I think he makes that point really well, actually. Because he says that his Enterprise is by far and away superior to the Stargazer. Yeah. But the Stargazer was his first command. That was his ship. And that's the one he'll always love. The same as Scotty, he was an engineer on other ships, but the Enterprise was the first one he was the chief engineer on. That's his engineering, his ship, and that's the one he'll always love.
Right. Yep. The only one he thinks of. The only one that miss. So, yeah, it's a very good, nice, touching scene having them two in the holodeck. And then all of a sudden, Scotty starts to realize he's just a fish out of water. He's in the way, and it's, he's an old man. He can't go back. It's time to start acting my age. And he walks out. So, and I think that's where Picard realizes there's, you know, this would have been a great time for him to send the counselor.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because he's still drunk at this point, so he needs to go sleep.
Yeah.
As we see later on, he doesn't quite make it in time for the transporter, but it'll be fine.
Yeah. So what do we think about Picard stepping in and requesting LaForge actually go with Scotty down to the Janolan to download the computer systems? Which I always thought they could do by remote control, but...
Okay. They would need to bring them online first, and I think the problem is they're not quite online, so they have to go over there and do that. That's first. True. So it makes sense. But I do like the way Picard says, this is not a request. Yes, it is.
No, yeah, he says it's not an order, it's a request.
Oh, sorry.
Like, if what if he would have said, no, Captain, I don't like him.
It's just an order, then.
It's just an old ass.
Yeah. It's a request that's going to be an order if you don't take the request.
Yes. This is not an order unless you make it an order. All right. But he does. He, you know, because, you know, most important things in a man's life is to feel useful. And he is a Starfleet captain. So I want you to make him feel useful again. Yes, sir. I'll do what you say, sir. And here's another thing, the communications array. Just as soon as Geordi walks out of the ready room, Data says, Commander, I found something that looks like a communications array. I'm surprised I didn't stop Geordi, like, a what? What? But no, he walks on out. And he seems kind of rather surprised later when Scotty finds that same communications array.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't trigger anything. Yeah, it didn't trigger. Wait a second, Data was saying something about a communications array, but I was too busy. But anyway, so they wait till Geordi and Scotty are off the ship with this hangover, and then they decide to catch up to that communications array, hail it, and boom, this thing just pulls them inside. And then they get to finally take a look at inside. What do you guys think of the inside of this thing?
I think it looks pretty cool. I mean, it's amazing to think, like, the Dyson Sphere itself, you don't really get that sense of scale from the outside because it's just a big ball of metal. But once you get pulled inside, you suddenly realise that the entire internal surface of that is land and water, and it's a giant M-class planet.
Yeah.
Which is phenomenal.
Yeah, it is. And what was it? The star was dying or what? Do you remember quite?
It was going through an active period, so it was lots of flares, and I don't know if it was actually dying, but whoever lived in that sphere had long gone because it was going through that period. So, and you would imagine they are a very advanced race to be able to build such a massive Dyson Sphere. Which, to me, I mean, a Dyson Sphere is also the thing you find in a vacuum cleaner. But...
yeah. So what would happen if the star had exploded? Would the Dyson Sphere explode as well, or just absorb it all?
I would imagine it would explode.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be severely damaged. At absolute best. If that star expands far enough, it's going to wipe out the entire sphere.
Ah, okay. Okay.
I mean, if you compare our sun, when it goes through its dying stage, I think it's going to expand out to about the orbit of Mars.
Yeah, it's
going to
suddenly take us out.
Oh, yeah. I would hope so.
So that Dyson Sphere is closer than we are, so the chances are that if this star's going to go through its dying phase, I mean, it expands, that Dyson Sphere's gone. It just had it.
Now, the thing I'm confused about with this, by the way, the one thing that kind of made me a bit perplexed is that how is the gravity working on the inner surface of the Dyson Sphere? Is it artificial gravity, or are they using some kind of centrifugal force to keep it stuck on? Because if they're using centrifugal force, then you're not going to have that at the poles. And in fact, you're going to have stronger gravity at the middle, and it's going to be weaker as you head over towards the poles, which would produce a really weird, probably the atmosphere would probably not be that great. You're probably having storms and stuff.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't really considered the gravity, because the sphere itself is so massive, it's going to be having its own gravitational pull. But it will be pulling in a weird direction, because if you're standing on the surface, most of the mass is above you.
Yeah.
So yeah, you'd be pulled up the way, because you've got the mass of the sphere itself and the mass of the star. Now, the star's unlikely to affect you. I suppose the distance of the rest of the star is unlikely to affect you as well, given
the way it would work for gravity is that whether it's a hollow sphere or not, it always works out that your is going to be pulled towards the center of mass, and the center of mass is going to be where the star is anyway.
Yeah.
So the kind of the net effect of your ground being the Dyson sphere, but then also stuff above you being the Dyson sphere on the other side, I think the net effect of all that will be towards pushing you towards the center anyway. So you either need artificial gravity in order to get you stuck, or you need to be spinning. And I think if it's spinning, it is going to be proportional to the radius of which you're being spun around, which is not going to be. That's not going to be, the spinning is going to be a two-dimensional rotation. So that's not going to be consistent across the entirety of the sphere. In one plane, you'll be fine. But as soon as you go up, it's going to be, you're going to start getting the gravity.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So actually, I'm asking this really because I was sitting there thinking, could this really be possible? Could this really work? And I've not come to a conclusion yet as to whether or not it would need artificial gravity.
That's a good question. I mean, the concept of the Dyson sphere is solidly based in actual scientific fact, isn't it? I think somebody proposed that it's possible.
Yeah, someone proposed it was possible. I think that in general, people were thinking more of like a mesh rather than a solid structure, so you wouldn't necessarily have it entirely solid. I think I saw a calculation once by some dudes on YouTube that reckoned that... that it would require so much mass, you would have to find so much, you physically couldn't find it within our solar system. So you'd have to go to like thousands of solar systems in order to find the actual mass, the actual matter that you're using to construct it, because it's, even though it's a hollow shell, it's a very, very big shell. Right, and unless it's going to be microscopically thin, it's going to be it's going to be a substantial amount of matter that you have to find, and I think they suggested that there'll be so much matter that it just wouldn't be able to work. I think it does sound like a cool thing, right? And there are people that propose that as you advance technologically, what do people do? Do people go around trying to go to different planets, or do you actually just build around your own star and effectively go, you disappear from the observable night, and no one's going to come around bugging you, right? No one's going to be encroaching on your land. It is a very, very easy way of reinforcing your little domain. And if you had the tech to build it, it's probably a very safe thing to do. From a civilization's perspective, I mean.
Okay. Everybody got that? Good. Okay, so, on the Genoan, Scotty and LaForge are trying to get the computers to work, and they bring a power system, right? But the power system doesn't seem to want to work properly. Because it's just too advanced for these computers. It's a piece of junk. It's out of time. And LaForge is now telling Scotty about all the ways the Enterprise system is still about the same or similar to what he's used to. I mean, makes sense, right?
Yep. Well, I don't know. It seems like I think he actually said the impulse engines hadn't changed in 200 years. So even the technology that Scotty was working on when he was working on the original Enterprise was about 100 years old.
Right, and Geordi ends up saying something that he probably should have said about 2 days ago to the guy, saying, just because something's old doesn't mean you throw it away. And that was a nice thing to say, because that gives Scotty his smile. One of Earth's few smiles when he realizes that is so true. So, you know, if they could build ships like your Enterprise, who would want to pilot a rust bucket like this? And, you know, and Geordi's like, hey, you know, if this thing was in good shape, it'd run circles around the Enterprise at impulse speeds.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It's a smaller ship. It's probably more maneuverable than Enterprise. It reminds me of a runabout, actually. It looks like a 23rd century version of a runabout. Just the design of it. It might also look a bit like the... is it the Obrus class without the bottom bit? The USS Grissom from Search for Spock. That was Obrus class. It looks like the top bit of that without the bottom bit in it. The bottom bit that never made any sense because it wasn't really connected to the top bit, and how do you get to it?
Yeah, yeah. And so now if they need a power inverter, and that'll work just fine. So, well, I know exactly where we could find one. Let's call the Enterprise. And it's not there. It's gone. So now they have to work together to figure out how to not only get this thing running, how to try and track and help the Enterprise. I mean, if this ship crashed 75 years ago, don't you think they would have tried to get it off of this Dyson sphere?
Yeah, but I get the impression that the missing piece is the thing they brought with them to get power running again. They didn't have enough power to get it back up off the sphere. Now that they have it, they were able to do enough with it. I mean, Scotty does do a great amount of moaning before just getting on with it anyway.
Yeah.
But there's also a difference between the power you need to get back up so you can look for the Enterprise, which you would imagine would be within the star system at absolute most, and the power they would need to get up and get to a location where they can call help. So, you know, I think if they can just about hobble up and have a look around and potentially go through the hole, that's all they need this time. Whereas before, they needed to basically get it in their starbase.
Yeah, I guess they would have been limping along and finally died there. Just floating in space. Okay. Well, no use in crying about it. Let's see what you can do with that power converter. Is my Scottish accent getting any better?
It's better than mine.
Huh?
It's better than mine.
I don't think so. No. Okay. All right, so basically, I mean, I'm pretty much out of steam. I mean, we know that these, you know, they get the ship running because they had to do it together. Oh, and by the way, Geordi was captain then, right? Since Geordi took the command, he took the chair. That makes him captain, right?
Yep. I think it's a naval tradition, isn't it? Whoever's in charge is just called captain.
No, yeah. So, I mean, you know, and I like that part where, you know, he says, you're the senior officer here. I may be captain by rank, but all I ever wanted to be was an engineer. Now, what if Geordi said, yeah, well, me too, and I don't want a captain at all. No, thank you. You do it. Geordi, thank you, but you got to do it. No, you're going to do it. Geordi, shut the hell up. You just go do it. Yeah, but
The problem with that is none of us would have believed it, because all we ever saw Scotty was as an engineer. The first season of TNG, Geordi was in a red uniform, not a yellow one. He was on the bridge. He was in the command line. And we know alternate future that Geordi does indeed become a cat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Which brings me to something that, James, you said about earlier. You know, what do we think of Geordi and Voyager? Actually, I liked Geordi and Voyager.
Me too.
I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, he had the visor off. He's like, yeah, hey, I might be trying to do the same thing as you. You know, what would you do in my place? Yeah, I might be doing the same thing as you, but I have my orders. And he's got his 15 years of history that he needs to defend in the temporal mechanics, and he just can't let Chakotay do this. And, you know, well, you got to do what you got to do. Yeah, okay. And Chakotay says, good luck. Yeah, same to you. And then, boom, they start firing on him. Here's the thing. Do you think a galaxy class starship, not destroying the Delta Flyer makes any sense? Wouldn't it take a few shots and boom, they're done? It's almost like Geordi was saying, you know, hit that ship with 10% power. Because maybe in the end he can understand.
Possibly, but again, the Delta Flyer would be a lot more maneuverable than a galaxy class starship. So I can imagine a lot of evasive maneuvers were done to avoid the shots that were happening. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Geordi was a little bit, don't hit them too hard.
Right. Yeah, don't kill him. Whatever you do, don't kill him. Just kind of punch him a few times, but don't kill him.
Geordi was far more understanding in that episode than he was in this one.
Yes, exactly. Maybe age and wisdom sets in after a while. So, take the bridge, Commander. Oh, no. You're the boss here. So, and what do? They finally are able to get it into an orbit, right? And they can see the Enterprise D's ion trail takes them right into this portal hatch. You know, after that communications array. Oh, wait a second. Yeah, well, we saw it too, and we hailed it. Yeah, standard hailing is here too. Oh, yeah, crap. That's right. They were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
That must have been what happened.
This confused me a bit earlier. Like, I mean, when they initially said that the Jolong crashed, it was due to some explosive failure. And now Scotty's saying the hail was a standard procedure and they were dragged down onto the sphere. So, was it explosive or were they dragged down? And also, if they were dragged down, why weren't they dragged in like the Enterprise was? Were they able to fight off the tractor beam more than the Galaxy-class starship was?
I mean, in fairness, once they were dragged down, there was probably an explosion or two. So,
yeah.
Well, he was probably in bed at the time, too. He wasn't a member of the crew, so he may not have known exactly what was going on. But, you know, he doesn't say, we hailed this thing, and all of a sudden, beams of light came at us, because then, when Picard says, hail it, you know, oh wait, you know, Scotty did warn me about hailing this thing. Okay, it destroyed the story. But they find the Enterprise was gone, and its ion trail leads them right to there, so that looks like a communications array. You know, we would hail it. Well, yeah, we'd hail it too. Maybe that's what they did, and it just drug them in while the Enterprise's brakes were skidding all the way down. So let's save them, and the only way to do that is to hail that thing, but we gotta stay far enough away. And then, when it decides nobody's there, just use our ship to ram that door open. I think that's pretty much the rest of the story.
Pretty much. I like the idea that Scotty's solution to this is to play like that childhood game where you ring a doorbell and run away.
Yeah.
whatever you guys call that. We call it Chappy. I've heard it called Chapdoor Run.
Oh, jeez. Now, I don't know what the ding-dong dashing or something. I don't know what we would call that. I never did that, I guess.
No, but, I never did that either, as I said. No, never.
No. Yeah. LaForge Enterprise, we're using the Jamal window. Keep this door open. Come on. But, and of course, they have to destroy the Genoan before they can get through. Maybe one of those crackpot engineers on the ship, since O'Brien's gone. Who's the next best person to use a transporter? Anyway.
What do you mean O'Brien's gone? O'Brien's not gone.
Yeah, he's not on this anymore. He's on DS9.
No, he's not on DS9 yet. Because he turns up in Rascals, and we haven't done Rascals yet.
Oh, wait a second. When did DS9 start? I thought it started like season 6 of this.
It's midway through season 6. Yeah, in fact, we have Birthright. Birthright is when the Enterprise is at DS9.
Birthright?
Bashir's in it.
Oh.
Bashir's in the first part of the two-parter.
Oh, yeah, Rascals. Yeah, that's right. That's one of the most uncomfortable moments of his life. Oh, God, wait till we get to that one.
Do you think you don't like Keiko now?
Actually, I did like Keiko in this series.
I'm never going to elaborate on that.
Yeah, no. I thought Keiko here, when he married her, was a very nice girl. I mean, she seemed very sweet. I think it's the space station that made her what she became.
Unfortunately, she was just... in the episode you're referring to in Vasco, she's actually a girl.
Oh, no, I don't mean that. I mean, I thought you said I didn't like Keiko, and you're right. In DS9, I hate Keiko. But in here, I actually, in TNG, when he marries her, I thought it was a... She seemed like a very nice girl. But when she goes to DS9, she changes. Oh, but here in Rascals? Oh, my God. That's just creepy.
To be fair, when she goes to Deep Space Nine, she goes off and works on Bajor for months on end and has whatever her Bajoran boyfriend is that Miles doesn't know anything about.
Nothing about. No, one of them being a Paw Wraith. I bet you she got into bed with a Paw Wraith, and that's how that happened. Now, I did like her there, you know.
I quite liked that episode. That was probably Keiko's finest moment in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, her best moment, yeah.
That episode was the most unfortunate episode of all, because I had that on VHS, and it was a really good episode, but it always got in my way, because Trials and Tribulations was the other episode on the VHS. And it was always just, I don't want to watch this, I want to watch Trials and Tribulations. There's nothing wrong with the assignment, it's a really good episode, but it's just in the way. It's just unfortunate.
Okay. Well, maybe if we ever get to that Deep Space Nine podcast we've been talking about, maybe we'll let you know. We'll get you on for that one. So, yeah, you're coming on. You got to come on for, I don't know. Couple of the Keiko. Where was I? I don't remember where I was at anymore. So the ship, the solution was to destroy the Jadolan while one of the the best transporter room guy they had beams them aboard, and it works.
Through the shields. Hold on. That's impressive.
Yeah, through the shields of the Jelona. Well, because the Jelona shields are so old, they're no good. And Ensign Rager did have to turn the ship, you know. How come everybody doesn't fall to this one side when the ship is... where the ship is upside down, why don't they hit the ceiling, you know?
She doesn't get enough credit for that. Nobody told her to roll the Enterprise behind and do this. She just did it. Saw the problem, dealt with it. It's good to see that there's too many people in the Enterprise have to be ordered to do things. She just got on with it. So credit to Ensign Rager. She doesn't get enough credit in this one.
No. So it's time to say goodbye to Scotty. Let him go to the Norpin colony?
The Norpin colony. Did he bring his boat? In Star Trek 6, he says, I've just bought a boat. What did he do with the boat?
There we go. Yeah, it's a good point. The boat's sitting there Actually, the boat was waiting for him there. I mean, he didn't bring it all to Jenolan. I'm sure Amazon delivered it to the Norpin colony, right?
Maybe, yeah. That's cool.
2-day prime. 2-day prime. Speaking of which, is this my Amazon? No, that's not an Amazon box. Anyway, I do have an Amazon box here somewhere. 2-day prime. So before he leaves... They're giving him one of their shuttles? Holy crap. Now, we have an unknown ensign who won't say a word during the transporter. We have Worf, Crusher, Picard, Data, Troy. She's probably got little chocolate stains on her chin. And Riker. They come to say goodbye. And he just assumes, you're giving me one of your shuttles? One of
your shuttles?
Well, call it an extended loan.
Yeah, call it an extended loan. What does that mean?
Technically, I don't think you're allowed to just give out shuttles, but yeah, I think they make an exception for Montgomery Scott, which is fair enough. And we also got another callback But this time it was a TNG callback, because we got to hear about the souring of the milk from Galaxy's Child. Which was nice. And obviously, Scotty got the reference as well, exactly what he was doing. So it was a lovely little sort of, you've told me all your stories, now I'll tell you one of mine. And Scotty's like, oh, I enjoy these times. I suppose it's especially when your girlfriend with the fiancé's hanging about. Yeah, I'm sure you enjoyed that.
Oh, man. So everybody shakes Scotty's hand or gives him a hug, except for Worf and him, who almost are like two dogs passing each other. You don't know if one little flinch will send them both on each other biting. That's kind of what it looked like. Ugh. But he gets in it. And if you guys remember, I used on the Luke Trek show, I always did these news from the future bits. And there was one about Scotty being pulled over for drunk drunk driving or something to that extent. You know, he claims that he's a 75-year... He came 75 years into the future, and the android at the bar got him drunk, and the captain of the ship put him in this bloody thing. And I don't remember how it went, but I thought it was hilarious. So, anyway.
How long is he supposed to last, by the way, without a functioning toilet in that shuttle? Because that shuttle's tiny. I mean, I think we're back into Tin Man territory.
I don't think it's quite that small. Like the you can barely sit down kind of size, but I would imagine there's a sort of a toilet that comes out of the wall, you know, the same way.
But there isn't a place to sleep though, right? Because I thought that you could literally see all the way through from the back to the front.
You can, but there's a couch that is a hide a bed.
Yeah, it all folds out. It's fine. It's just hidden away. Yeah, it's just a practical long range shuttle.
And I bet you it's got plenty of warp drive, plenty of fuel. He could go to, you know, if he needs to use a restroom, he'll stop at the
So the thing is that
BP
shuttles
station.
Aren't supposed to have warp drive, right? I mean, until the runabouts come around, shuttles aren't supposed to have warp drive. And it's always baffling because, I mean, we've had this discussion before. Shuttles without warp drive are useless, useless in every sense of the word. And you would never take one anywhere other than, you know, going from planet to moon. That's really what you would use the shuttle for.
Yeah, so in case your transporter's not working.
So if you're giving him his shuttle and there's no warp drive, you're basically saying that, hey, you're going to get to your colony in 452,000 years. Good luck.
Yeah, pretty much. Hey, you be careful out there. Thank you, laddie. And that's the end of that. So Geordi comes around after the captain has a talk with him. Probably put something in his permanent record. All right. So anyway, I guess that's it. So now it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode, on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst, and 5 being the truth. And so I'm just gonna assume that Paul's giving this a 5. Probably shouldn't, but we could try that. Chris, how about you? What do you think? What are your final thoughts and your rate for this one?
Yeah, so I said it at the start of the podcast that this is a terrific episode. It's my favourite of the guest appearances from TOS people. Obviously, Scotty being a Scotsman, it's kind of true to my heart as well. And it's as a standalone episode, it's really good. They touch on the seriousness of being that. Still want to be useful even though you're getting old or you're out of time or things have moved on without you, and that feeling of having lost all the people that you knew in your life, all the things that come with being old, not without going into what kind of illnesses you get, like dementia and arthritis and all the other kind of stuff you get when your body starts giving up. This is the mental side of being old. This is the real life expectations and the real life experiences of getting older and the world moving on without you. And I think it does a really good job of that. It's a fun episode. At the same time, it's nostalgic. It's heartbreaking. It's heart racing. It's exciting. It's a 5 out of 5.
All right, good. 5 out of 5. James, how about you?
I have no problem at all matching that with a 5 out of 5. I think this is a, you know, I ended up watching this episode maybe like 4 times over the last couple of weeks, through one reason or another, and each time it's such a pleasant episode to watch. I really enjoy the callbacks to the original series that are made throughout the show. It's generally it's just such a nice episode of Trek. It introduces obviously a beloved character from the past. You see him interact, you see him learning, and others learn as to how to handle people in this situation. So next time, by the way, everyone, next time you happen to pick someone out of the transporter beam that's 75 years removed from their present, you know, be a bit easier than Geordi was on Scotty. These people do need a bit of time and a bit of respect. I mean, overall, I think it's just great. It's a nice science-heavy episode as well. There's no real antagonist other than Geordi's attitude, as has been mentioned. And I think it's just I love the fact. I think one reason why I really enjoy Star Trek so much is that it can have these different kind of episodes next to other things, next to big questions being asked, next to big action-packed storylines, for what it is, this is as good as it gets, I think, in TNG.
Okay, so it's a 5 for you.
Indeed, yeah.
Well, I think Paul made the point earlier on that this isn't the kind of episode we'll get in Star Trek anymore, because the likes of Star Trek Discovery is a 15 episode arc. That all kind of stems from the way Deep Space Nine ended. It was a kind of 10 episode arc at the end, and they were starting to put things together. You don't get time for these kind of character centric standalone episodes that you get in your 26 episode seasons, and I think that this is the episodes that you're losing and you're missing them out on by doing that. And I think that's kind of sad, because when we get 13 episode arcs or 15 episode arcs, it's great. They tell great long stories. I'm delighted with the way that's set up. And yes, I'm not going to miss things like The Outrageous Corner or Imaginary Friend. Not going to miss those kind of episodes. It's these kind of episodes I'm going to miss, where they just take something and run with it and give us that magic that we just don't get anymore.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I don't think Deep Space Nine kind of got rid of these episodes. I think they're still there, but I certainly think that the current incarnations of Trek, and in particular the way that the films went, right? You could possibly argue from 5 onwards. It became, and I say 5 onwards because it's probably 2 onwards with the exception of 4, it moves away from kind of the smaller stories and the more character-driven stuff, for better or for worse. And certainly with Discovery, I mean, I think that even in the 10-episode arc in DS9, you were able to get, the Negus storyline in there, and also the Section 31 storyline in there, which was nice. But I do, one of the big reservations I have with Discovery in particular is that where would you put these episodes in the current scheduling of Trek? Episodes like this, or The Offspring, or something like that. And it's nowhere, unfortunately. You're not going to have time. You're also not going to have a place in order to inject these from an emotional perspective or an emotional journey perspective.
No, my hope is that the way CBS seem to be trying to push things going forward is that they're trying to do different things. So we've obviously got Discovery Season 2 coming up soon, which I'd imagine is going to follow the same format as Season 1, where it's a kind of long arc across a season worth of episodes. I don't know how they're going to set up the Picard series, whether that's going to be standalone episodes or whether they're going to follow the same Discovery aspect. But they do have this, is it an animated series? It's going to be written by the guys that did Rick and Morty. This is coming up as well, so this is going to be different again. So my hope is that CBS, with a push to try and make Trek just forever ongoing. There's always some form of Trek available that's new. They're going to be able to come back to having these standalone episodes, maybe not 26 episodes of a season worth, but maybe we'll have standalone episodes that cover off like 10 episodes or something like that, where there's a different story every week on the same ship. Maybe that's an idea for CBS. That instead of focusing on the main bridge crew, we can go and have another Lower Decks, for instance. I love Lower Decks. That's a great episode. Then again, that's to come up. That's the kind of thing I would like to see more. They tried to push Discovery as being that kind of thing, and ultimately it's still ended up being about the bridge crew, because although she's not the captain, she is still pretty much a senior member of the crew. I want to see Lieutenant Stevens, some bland person just getting on with his job. They focused him for an episode to see how he gets on.
Yeah. You know something? I read a recent article online where one of the things that somebody had pitched was a series of Star Trek from like a Vulcan, a Romulan, or a Klingon, or Cardassian perspective. And I said, shit, man, I've been saying that for years. We would, you know, I'd called it at the time Star Trek in the Eyes of the Enemy. Nice. Where we would have a season of nothing. We'd be on a Cardassian ship for the entire season. Then we could be on a Romulan ship for the entire season from their perspective as they're fighting the Federation or something, you know, little skirmishes, or we have Romulan things we could learn about their society. I've been saying that since 2009. And so maybe might be a good idea. I come up with them on occasion. So, but as far as standalone episodes, nothing beats. He's my number one dad. Okay, so my final thoughts and ratings, as my daughter's trying to call me. Let me ask you a question before I do give you my thoughts, because it's part of my thoughts. What if we had reviewed this episode before Jimmy Doohan's death? And we then watched Scotty being tormented and so on. Do you think it would have hurt as much?
Yeah.
Because he's just another actor?
No,
he's still alive?
To me, Jimmy Doohan's death, and was it 2005 now or something?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Was it that long?
I think it's been quite a while, yeah. So I don't think his death has really changed this episode for me. I mean, Scotty was still a beloved character for me, and to see him feeling so useless at times in this episode and feeling so lost, and the way Geordi reacts to him and the other people don't have time for him. I think it works really well, and it's very sad to watch. And I thought that when I first seen this episode, actually, it was just I don't think death of Jimmy Doohan made any difference in that way.
Okay, yeah, for some reason I just felt because he's dead now, we're watching his works, he's not around anymore, it just kind of a little bit different for me, I guess. It wouldn't have changed my rating in any way, but, you know, I wouldn't be seeing a now deceased Jimmy Doohan play this fish out of water so much. And it's just, like I said, some of these episodes, it's kind of painful to watch because he is such a strong figure. Even when he takes the bridge in the original series and goes against Admiral or Commodores and so on. Somebody was going to be wearing concrete galoshes, okay. There's a good question there. Concrete galoshes. Who uses that word?
Does anybody?
No, not that I know. So I thought maybe that was one of yours. You know, James yells out, "Hey, you! Don't forget to put on your galoshes." Anyway,
never happened.
I think Jimmy does some of the best acting here that he does on Star Trek. There's some very good stuff, but here he plays this episode with so much heart, so much soul. that I absolutely just, I love this one. And he sells the fact that he, while he was once a great man, he's this fish out of water. He can't go back over and do it all over again. However, I disagree. Okay, I think he's a genius. Just like Geordi says, a lot of the systems we use, you used. They're still in some way in place today. So it'd be very little for him to learn. I think he could learn. He could certainly teach. I think he could probably do that. So the way he's treated by LaForge was terrible. I hated that part. But I guess if we were to really feel sorry for him, we have to have reasons for us to feel sorry for him. And if everybody treated him wonderfully, there'd be no reason to feel sad for him. Okay, so they work together to solve the problem of the Enterprise. Bloody D, that is. So I love this one. It goes on car rides. Every time I take a long car ride, this one goes with it. So, yes, you guessed 5. 5, 5, 5. Anyway, did you guys see my shirt that I showed you earlier?
Omaha police officer.
And we don't call 999, we call 911. But yeah, I got that shirt off of off of Facebook. I guess the union was selling them, and I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. So it tends to get looks like, holy crap, is that a guy a cop? No, he's not. But, you know, I like it, so I thought maybe you'd like to see it. That is their actual badge. So, that's the actual Omaha Police badge. So, anyway, let's see. Chris, when do I have you on again? I have you on for lessons.
Nice. Good.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right, then. That is that. We will talk to you then. Anything else, gentlemen?
Without warning and no explanation, an experiment in terror has begun.
I've been in this room before.
We've all been here before.
Have crew members been kidnapped and memories erased?
I need to know if anyone comes on or off this ship.
It looks as though your arm has been severed and then reattached.
And will they be sacrificed as human guinea pigs?
Commander Riker has been taken from the Enterprise.
Next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
We have to say join us again next week as we review Schisms, is it?
Yeah, it is. All right, so, and we have Colin on for that one, so take care, everyone, and good night.
Okay, good night.
Mm-hmm.
Good night.
Oh, Norpin Colony, here I come.
What?
Norpin Colony, here I come.
Yes, yes, of course. Yeah.
All right. Good night, James. I know you're tired.
Oh, it's late. I've been ill today. I wasn't even at work today. I was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I had a bit of a cold. I've had a bit of a what the wife considers man flu. Is that a thing in the US? Man flu as well?